Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Tim R., and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting on NABA Zoom, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our NABA Zoom room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, we'll hear tonight's speaker. We believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, we are so grateful to be able to have Rowan D. visit us. You know, this is a miracle enough that we're not drinking. We're all together not drinking, but we're on Zoom and she's in Philadelphia. Tinsley said he had just told his story in London. This is just miraculous that we can share in recovery the way we are. And I had the opportunity to see Rowan a couple of months ago, a few weeks back at the Quarantine and Sober Group. She's got a profound amount of experience for such a young lady. It's unbelievable. She got sober in 89. Do the math. It's unbelievable. So here's Rowan D.
Thank you, Tim. You're too kind. I'm Rowan, and I am an alcoholic. It's good to be here with my people. It's funny. Whenever I speak at a meeting, I never know what I'm going to say. As I was right before the meeting, I was looking at some of my literature and stuff, and something popped out at me that was so relevant 30-odd years ago and still is relevant every single day in my life. And I remember going to one of my first meetings in Philly, and they gave me this green card. And I carried that green card around until I think it disintegrated or something. But I would read that because – and I'm just going to read it really quick. It is approved. Like, I got it in an AA meeting because I know, you know, I'm very respectful of the boundaries of AA literature and everything. So it says there's 2 days in every week about which we should not worry. 2 days which should be kept free of fear and apprehension. One of these days is yesterday with its mistakes and cares, its faults and blunders, its aches and pains. Yesterday has passed forever beyond our control. All the money in the world cannot bring back yesterday. We cannot undo a single act we performed. We can't erase a single word we said. Yesterday is gone. The other day we shouldn't worry about is tomorrow. With its possible adversities, its burdens, its larger promise, tomorrow is also beyond our immediate control. Tomorrow the sun will rise either in splendor or behind a mask of clouds, but it will rise. Until it does, we have no stake in tomorrow, for it is as yet unborn. This leaves only one day, today. Any man can fight the battles of just one day. It is only when you and I add the burdens of those two awful eternities, yesterday and tomorrow, that we break down. It's not the experience of today that drives men mad. It's the remorse or bitterness for something which happened yesterday, and the dread of what tomorrow may bring. Let us therefore live but one day at a time. And that literally kept me sober, among other things. But the thought that I just had to do this today, the thought of me having to go back and all the remorse that I felt for things that I had done before I stopped drinking, and then stopping drinking and never having it in my life again, it was way too overwhelming. So I needed to stay in today. And still today, I need to stay in today about a lot of other things in life, right? like stuff happens and I can't control. And I say, can I get through 24 hours of this feeling? Can I do this in 24 hours? And I will worry about tomorrow when it gets here. And when I narrow it down to that, then it is much more doable and life is much more doable. And I learned that in AA. That's what the steps do for me. They bring me to a point where I can learn to live a life that I don't have to numb myself and exploit, manipulate others and situations in order to survive. I don't just survive today. I'm not big on talking about my drunkalog. I think we all have one. Again, I mean, I started drinking when I was probably in high school. Once it touched my lips, that was it. There was no turning back because all of the shame and the outsider feelings I had and the didn't fit in and stuff that went on in my household where I would be a nervous wreck and just do things that were not kind to myself and just all of that, those awful feelings of shame, poof, put a drink in me, I was numb. I was a blackout drinker from my first drink. And you put drink in me and I didn't have to feel anything. And that was exactly what I was looking for. I was not a functioning alcoholic. I did not have a family and get married. I drank, period. And I found ways to make my life work with my drinking, meaning I realized that I didn't drive really well when I drank. So instead of not drinking, I decided I shouldn't drive. So I moved to Center City, Philadelphia, where I could walk everywhere and go to my bars because my life revolved around how to drink better and smarter. And that's pretty much how it went. I moved to the city when I was 18. I had been drinking probably since I was like 14. And it just, like I said, it got to be a problem. So I moved to the city and I got a job at a bar and I drank whenever I could. The bar was a bar that opened at 8 a.m. and catered to people that came right off the street, that pretty much lived on the street, and was open until, 2 a.m. So I would go in there in the morning a lot of times and drink with the guys off the street and felt completely 100% comfortable coming, right from the suburbs, right into Philly, and 100% comfortable because they got it. They wanted to drink too. If you drank, we got along. And then I would go to work and I would drink while I was working and it all fit in. Again, I found a way to make my life work. So alcohol was not something I wouldn't stand out. I blended into the bar scene. I blended into 8 a.m. in the bar. So that was pretty much. Other substances came in to speed the process up and thank God they did because things brought me to my knees that maybe alcohol might not have at my age, but they did. And I realized that the one thing that was always a constant was alcohol. No matter what else I tried to stop doing that I really thought was the problem, if I got drunk and I went into a blackout, I did other things. And therefore, alcohol has always been that best friend that turned on me, so to speak. So I had a friend who went into rehab because it was jail or rehab for doing some vandalizing. And I had never heard of AA. My parents didn't drink. They had other problems, but they didn't drink. So he went into AA and I was like, tell me about this AA thing. And he did, and I was like, wow, I'm a worse drinker than you. And then I started getting flagged from all the bars around me in Philadelphia. And it just was, I became a problem to people. You know, they didn't want me around because I did crazy stuff and I was a menace. So I decided one day, I'll try this AA meeting thing with you, Mike. And I went to the bar the night before, and I sat there. I'll never forget, my last drink was a shot of tequila and with vodka on the rocks, chaser, and told everybody how I was going to go to an AA meeting tomorrow. They were probably, now that I look back, they were probably like, what the heck are you talking about? But so I went home, and the next day I went to an AA meeting. And it must have been the right time for me. People showed up and were very supportive. And I think my moment of clarity happened multiple times before I came in for my first meeting, and that was, Rowan, do you want to live or die? Because I tried to, I did crazy stuff when I was using and would end up in hospitals and police stations and stuff. And it was like, do you want to live or die? If you keep doing this, you will die. If you want to live, you need to find another way. And then this AA thing popped up. So that was my other way. But I had no idea how to do it. And I was terrified to leave the block of my house without being wasted. So I basically was 20 years old, wanted to live, wanted a life, was tired of sitting on a bar stool talking about all the things I wanted to do and never doing a damn thing but drinking. So you guys told me keep coming back, and I hated you all for it. I did not have a pink cloud that I know of until maybe years later. I was angry. I had to say goodbye to my best friend, alcohol, and I had to learn to live in a way that I had no idea how to. But the good thing was, is no matter how angry I was, how much I cried, how sorry I felt for myself, you guys redirected me, gave me a different perspective, helped me not turn into the snowball rolling down the hill and making things so humongously big, which is what I am prone to do. You told me there is another way, and if you want what we have, stick around. And then you told me to look around the room, and that, I forget what they told me. They used to say, like, 90% of the people here won't be here in a year or two. So if you want to be one of the ones that is, then you sit down, you listen, you get a sponsor, and you do what we suggest and what the book suggests. And your chances are a lot better off that you will be. And I mean, maybe I think I was just scared and desperate in the beginning. That's probably what kept me sober, because I had nothing. I had nowhere. So I did what they said. I made meetings like crazy. I detoxed in the meeting. I remember just rocking back and forth. This meeting was great. Mustard seed. I knew I found my people. They used to call mustard seed Yale to jail, because literally you would have, like, there was a district attorney down to, like, you know, somebody just coming right off the streets that lived, unfortunately, on a grate. But you had everybody. So you could never say, well, I don't relate, because everybody was there. And I felt comfortable for the first time in a long time. And I almost feel like I got parented. You know, people, I just let people teach me. I was teachable for the first time in a long, long time. And I got a sponsor. I started emptying ashtrays. This is when you could still smoke in meetings. I emptied ashtrays. I stacked chairs. I went to tons of beginners meetings. I shared. I listened to suggestions. I tried not to get angry when people said, you know, keep coming back and all. It was tough, but I kept coming no matter what. I wanted to drink in the beginning a lot. For anybody that's new that hasn't had that obsession lifted yet, I wanted to drink in the beginning. It was part of my DNA practically in the beginning, but with time and with help, I can't speak for anybody else but me, but that obsession was lifted. And And then after the obsession is lifted and you powerlessness has become part of your life, I don't have the option of a drink. That is not an option. So things would happen and I would call my sponsor, blah, 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 happened. See, nothing works well in my life. I might as well drink. And she taught me something very interesting that tied step one and then the next two steps together. And that was, you don't have the luxury if you truly admit that you are powerless and you're an alcoholic. That's not an option for you. And I'm like, then what do I do? And she basically told me, you take the drinking that you can't handle and you give it up to God. And I used to visualize that when I would be like, oh, I want to drink. Okay, drinking, can't do, don't do well, put it up here on a shelf. And then I would look at what the problem was. And if it was, you know, my shoelace broke that day, buy a new shoelace. So I literally had to pretend like I couldn't deal with the drinking part, what was left. And that was how I made it through moments of extreme cravings and going to meetings and talking to my sponsor and having sober friends. So there were a lot of other young people that got sober with me. And so we decided, you know, we all hung out together. There was a really good camaraderie. I was very fortunate like that. And we started the first young people's meeting in Philadelphia, and that was great. We had a chance to be part of something that meant something to us. It was a late night meeting, and we didn't feel left out, alone, or we felt like we were among our peers. However, we still had our sponsors and old timers. We would go to all different kinds of meetings, but it was good. We got involved. I mean, I can't say enough about the program. I mean, the steps, it's like the way I look at it is this, is everybody has a past, right? What inspirational story ever began and ended with, I was perfect, you know, like I was born to the perfect parents. I went to the perfect school. I never had any issues with anybody. I never felt, you know, I never felt bad, and I died perfect. Like, that is so non-inspirational. Why does God give me issues? God gives me issues so that I can work through them, have the opportunity to grow, learn the lesson that's in there, and then share it with others. And that's why I'm here on earth. And that's what I believe. That nobody else, I don't push my beliefs on anybody. That's what I believe for me. That's how I make sense out of the mess. Let the mess become your message is something I was taught early on. So that's what I try to do. I'm grateful for everything that's happened. I have not had, like, I have not been an angel in sobriety. I'll tell you that. I have had fun. And I don't mean drugs or alcohol or anything. What I mean is that I've experienced life. I live life. And I've let things get in the way. I've let the pursuit for success get in the way of my serenity. And I learned that lesson. And it was not fun. I let the pursuit of letting somebody, wanting somebody to take care of me, get in the way of my serenity. And that was a painful lesson, but I learned it. And there's many other lessons, you know, whatever I ask for, I get. I want to learn patience. I tore my ACL 5 months ago. I was praying for patience. Now people might say that's crazy to think of it that way. I need to, because if I can't get a lesson out of something like that, then I make it into a poor me. Or why does life happen to me? Life doesn't happen to me. It happens for me. And the ACL really made me learn a lot of things. Number one, I can work as hard as I want at some stuff, but really it's in God's time, not mine. And number two, patience. It's not in my time. I can work as hard as I want. So I'm trying to get the lessons out of life. And that's what AA does for me. You know, it makes me look at me. This happened. What can I do? What character effect is this bringing out that's making me so angry, and what do I need to work on? And how do I be of service to other people? Because really, God's like a touchy thing for a lot of people when they come into the program, including me. And so God, I always used to look at as gratefulness, because it's hard not to feel God when I'm grateful. It's like my heart just gets really big, and I love people and feel compassion for myself and others. And so I try to work on gratitude when I'm feeling not spiritually sound, because that's my direct connection to a power greater than myself. This year has been a lot about spirituality, and somebody dropped into my life that taught me a lot. And my higher power idea has really evolved into different areas, like different ways. It's grown, it's changed over the years. And this year is probably the most amazing year when it comes to my higher power and a relationship with power greater than myself, that I really do trust now that God is not a school marm like my parents. You should do this. Like, that's how it used to be. And I think I had a hard time with peace and self-love and stuff like that because of it. And I was hard on myself and others because of it. I had a hard time with being judgmental and expecting perfection from myself and others. And she really changed that for me. She really was like, Roanne, you are enough for your higher power. Your higher power loves you exactly as you are. Start trying to be kind and compassionate, and then you will be able to do the things that you need to do in order to work the steps and in order to feel compassion for other people. And let me tell you, I went to a party the other day, and a couple walked in that was friends with my ex-husband that I used to want to flee a room when they were there because of all the feelings and the anger and everything that comes up. I can honestly say I was not affected at all. And I literally was like, God, oh my gosh, this works. Like, it was like my proof, you know? I was like, wow, that is amazing. And it, with God and the steps, these things are lifted. But it is not a final destination either, which is what I found out. You know, work the steps, okay, done, and now I'll be like this forever. No, it is, it's upkeep. It's constant upkeep, because shit doesn't stop. Stuff doesn't stop happening in life, so you can't stop working your program until you're dead. And then stuff stops happening. So that is what I need to do. Do I do it perfectly? Heck no. But I have people in my life that are brave enough. I put people in my life that aren't, oh, everything's okay. They are brave enough to say, Roanne, I see this. And I stay teachable enough to say, really? God, I got to work on that. Instead of getting defensive, because I know they only want the best for me. So AA works. I don't know why it works. I don't know how it works. And I don't really need to know. Doesn't matter. It just matters that it works. And you guys have been great examples to me of that everybody, I think everybody in the world has situations that happen in order for them to get to that place. Hopefully they get to that place where they can learn how to be of service and how to live in a loving way. My way that was presented to me was by being a drunk. And I look at it as, okay, that was my way. That was how I learned. You know, I don't know other people are normal people that aren't alcoholics. They have other stuff that's happened that's brought them closer or further away. So either with drinking, I can go to AA and become closer because it has the steps and it has a connection with the higher power, or I can keep drinking and then I will get further away. So I'm just grateful to be here, and I'm going to shut up because I have a lot that I can learn from you guys. And I would love to, you know, hear your experience and strength and hope. And just for today, That's all you need to do is today, and just try to do the next right thing. You don't have to get it all. I didn't. It was 5 years till I really, really cleared up to the point where I could walk down 15th Street and not feel like the bar was going to suck me in. Does that make me less of a person? No, it doesn't. It means I was doing the best that I could, and I wasn't drinking, and I was trying to listen and work the steps with the sponsor. So anyway, thank you. Love you guys. That's all I have.
Thank you, Roanne. You know, they say that a good speaker finishes on time and a great speaker finishes a little bit early. We do normally chat after somebody tells their story, so this is going to work just great, I believe. Who would like to be the first to share?
My name is Jenny. I'm an alcoholic. And, Roanne, thank you very much for sharing your story. And I think that's good. The yesterday, the tomorrow, and living in today, because today's what we can work with. Today's what we've got to work with. So really appreciate you sharing all that. Thank you.
Hey, my name is Kinsley. I'm an alcoholic, and I appreciate that story very much, and I could really relate to the part about how you shared that we never hear anybody, especially when they tell their stories, say that they came from a perfect family, or had a perfect childhood, or a perfect life. And those are the types of feelings that I always felt like I was coming up short because of those feelings of imperfection. And it reminds me of the literature says that alcoholics are perfectionists, and I can definitely relate to that. When things didn't go my way, or when things weren't just perfect, I was always used that as an excuse to get thirsty and have a drink, and that made things even more imperfect. So I think you pointed out that this program and this fellowship and sobriety in general has given us the ability to kind of fit into a world that is imperfect, and it doesn't change its shape to accommodate us. We have to change our shape to accommodate people, places, and things, and put up with all sorts of stuff that happens. If there's something that's going to rock my world or test my sobriety, that'll be the thing that will move me towards a drink. It won't be when things are going well. It'll be when things don't meet my expectations. And I don't run a charm school. I can't get people to do what I want them to do. And I just have to find a way to get along with them and get along with people, places, and things without a drink in my hand. And I think you pointed that out real well in your story. So thank you.
Hi, my name is Lauren. I'm an alcoholic. Roanne, thank you so, so much for your story and how eloquently like you said it. And I, too, like the the only 2 days we need to worry about or not worry about. We just need to think about this day and not in the past and not in the future. And I also love the way you said for your drinking and how you tied together the first 3 steps and that you took your drinking and you did this and put it up on a shelf. Then I think you meant giving it to your higher power. And I do that with things. I never thought about it. Well, I did. I thought with my alcoholism, but the way you portrayed it was just lovely, and one of my favorite speaker meetings. I just really identified with a lot that you said and turning things over, and we really appreciate you telling your story tonight. Thank you.
Thanks, Lauren. Anna Doris?
Yeah, hi, I'm Anna Doris. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for your story, and, you know, I always thought that I too thought I was, you know, I grew up with everything was perfectly fine, but I didn't think it was fine. I always thought that I somehow came with the wrong information. I arrived at school with the wrong clothes, with the wrong, and I did sometimes. I remember actually I did arrive with the wrong clothes and the wrong shoes. You know, I always felt like the oddball, And I never fit in. And but you know, there is no perfect family. There is no perfect thing. I see, what I was always looking for was something, the next thing that was going to fix me. Somehow the next solution. There's got to be something. You know, there's got to be something to fix me. Fix how, not even to fix me, but to fix how I feel. To fix how I think I should be. And so this, you know, making, having people take care of me, thinking that I can't do it. I'm afraid to take the next step in a career. I'm afraid, so lacking in confidence and wanting, and whenever a man is taking care of me, sorry for the other men in here, there should be a girls meeting, but anyway, I've always gotten into trouble. So, you know, they've gotten me in, well, let's not say that. But anyway, I've gotten myself into trouble. And so, you know, I've always been really capable. I just didn't know I had that. And so looking for things on the outside to fix the inside, like if I only had the right pair of shoes, everything would be okay. It's kind of the way I felt. Sometimes still do. This is such a growing up process so that I fix the inside so that it matches the outside and it's okay that it's not perfect. And what is perfect anyway, right? So anyway, that's all I have. Thanks for your sharing, for the bravery to speak like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna Doris.
Hi, I'm Shanika. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much, Rowan, for sharing your story and tidbits on what you learned along the way and what you still do now. It's very, very helpful. There are a lot of similarities in your story to my story. And then it also let me learn that, you know, I'm always going to be learning. I'm always going to be teachable as long as I'm on this earth. Simply because I'm an alcoholic. So I'm going to have to learn how to handle situations without picking up a drink. And the only way I know to learn that is to come to the rooms and listen to everyone, especially those sharing their story, because they've been there and they've done that. And I just greatly appreciate you being here. I'm grateful that I was able to be here to hear you. So thank you.
Hey, Rowena, I'm Gary, and I'm an alcoholic. And what a great story you had. I needed to hear your story today because I've been in a case of the self-pity pot, man. And, you know, and I have friends, just like you said, that have the courage to tell me, you need to stay home and take care of yourself, you know. And, you know, I may not always like to hear things from other people or suggestions. I'm not, you know, I'll be honest, there's times I'm not the most open-minded guy to suggestions, okay? But, you know, usually by the time I have time to chew on it a little bit, they're right, you know, and I usually end up saying, hey, thanks a lot for caring and, you know, help, you know, thinking about me. They don't have to, you know, so it's kind of nice when people do. And I could really relate to what one of our other compadres said about going to school with the wrong clothes on. You know, I remember when my dad was in the diplomatic corps in Central America and we had just come back to Southern California to live. And my first day of school, I'm in a damn sweater vest, you know, a little tie and patent leather shoes. And I mean, it was a piece of work. And I'm getting ready to get on this big yellow bus with guys that are wearing, you know, Van shoes and Levi's and Hang Ten t-shirts. And man, I was definitely the guy out of place in that situation. Wow. I never fit in a lot of ways. You know, I had a young dual education. I learned how the world worked. You know, in a pretty young age, I was a manipulator, a deceiver, all that good junk. I'm glad you found it at 20. I was doing the math myself, you know. When in 1989, I was about 27 years old, and I still hadn't gotten it. Boy, it took me till I took 2 years and some change to finally get it. So I really commend you on your determination to go forward with a sober life. And you just really inspired me, and I really did enjoy your story. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Things moved out of my way, running so fast and wild. After time, trouble stuck on me. Found a way to blot it out, blindness I could be. Every time I got it going on, knocked back down to size. What's the use in hiding now? Stop to realize. Stop the big debate. Stop the criticize. Love has got